My name is Frank Weltner, and I am the librarian of GWatch, and I am here to welcome you to the world today. We live in a world of Jewish elitism, where Jewish supremacists run our banks, influence our government, and overly influence our police, our military, our foreign policy, our banking. Almost every area of our culture and our lives have been dominated by the Jewish supremacists. Harvard University is 40-60% Jewish, and the number of Jews are even higher in many of the administrative positions. It is sometimes hard to find a university that doesn't have either a Jewish chancellor or vice chancellor, or both. And of course, the boards of curators of these universities are highly Jewish. You would think from the media that these people belong there because either they have done something that would merit their appointment, or for some reason they're better than anyone else who could be appointed. In many of these cases, they are appointed simply because they have the bucks to donate to the college so that whatever the college wants, they get it. And they get it because the particular people who have been appointed basically were able to either raise the money or provide it from their own funds. This is a form of Jewish good old boy networking that we see all over the country. You especially see it out in Hollywood, where it's very difficult to find a star that isn't Jewish. Of course, they may change their name. Jews are very, very desirous of changing their names. I don't think there's any race of people that changes their names as much as Jewish people do. A lot of it, I think, is because they wish to hide the fact that they're Jewish. They think that if people know I'm Jewish, they'll treat me differently. But if they think I'm one of them, whether that be a Christian or a Hindu or a communist or whatever, that they will treat them better. But as a matter of fact, the Jews treat themselves so good that I don't think they need the Gentiles to pat them on the head or on the back and tell them what a good job they're doing, because with so many Jews at the top of the ladder, up there in that glass cage, appointing whom they want to work for them, the Jews generally have a better chance of rising to the top first, far better chances than the Goyim might have, or the Gentiles down below. And that's, of course, the way things should be, because you should stick up for your own people. Certainly it would be unnatural to think that Jewish people wouldn't want to appoint their own relatives first. These are their family members. These are basically family. And if you were a person that owned a factory and you had a son or a daughter, you would certainly appoint that son or daughter before you would appoint another person, especially if that person were, let's say, a Gentile and you were Jewish. Or if you were a Gentile, you might not appoint a Jewish person to be your assistant. You might want to appoint your son or your daughter. I mean, this is only natural. I think that the Gentiles are more likely to appoint Jewish people to positions of power than vice versa. And I say this because I look at the great grants institutions. For instance, the Ford Foundation. Henry Ford was a grand anti-Semite. He had seen his business almost taken over by the Jews of Wall Street, and he was able to stop that just in time. And it alerted him to the confusion that runs through American industry when Jewish people are able to get together and to purchase stocks using a private method to which only Jews are privy. For instance, you might have a Jewish person who has a business group, and there are 10 Jews in it, and they decide they're going to take over a certain company, let's say Ford Motor Company, and all 10 of them go out separately and purchase stocks. And then they begin to exchange the stocks with their buddies so that only one or two of the people have that stock. And they show up at the at the annual meeting and announce that they're taking over the company because they have the stock to make that stick. If you don't think that ever happens, you need to think again. This has happened hundreds of thousands of times in the United States. I remember in St. Louis we had a beer company by the name of the Falstaff Brewing Company, and it employed somewhere between 30 and 60,000 people. People had worked there for decades. This company went all the way back to the 1800s. It had been shut down by Prohibition, but it reopened. And that particular brewery was, I believe, even larger than the Budweiser brewery at one time. Falstaff was a very, very popular beer. At any rate, it was popular enough, and it made enough money that they could buy a baseball team. In fact, they owned the team that the Busch Brewing Company owned later. The name of the Falstaff Brewing Company was the Griesdick Brothers Beer Company. The original beer that they had was called Griesdick Brothers. And Harry Carey and Dizzy Dean used to announce the games. They announced the Browns, and they also announced the Cardinals. And they would say that on a hot day, it's wonderful to reach for an ice-cold Griesdick. I've told people in New York, I've told people everywhere that this was a part of the urban lore of St. Louis. But the point of this is not that the beer was called Griesdick, which was later changed to GB for good beer, and was later changed to Falstaff, because people kind of objected to the name of the owner. And it sounded, it just wasn't right for radio, and it wasn't right for television. And once they changed it, and it became the Falstaff Brewing Company, then it really began to take off, and people were purchasing it. It was a kind of a bad beer. I used to joke when I was in college that what I liked about Falstaff was that when you ordered a keg of it, you got to order the detergent for the foam, because it tasted like soap, absolutely like soap, and it was a bunch of junk beer, really. But it was cheap. It was cheap. It is sort of like what Busch Bavarian beer used to be, which is not really a terribly cheap beer, but it's a beer that the kids like to drink, and a lot of adults like to drink. And Falstaff was that kind of a beer. At any rate, the point to this is that after the company became extremely powerful, it started to compete with Budweiser, which was the Anheuser-Busch Brewing Company, which owned it. And they would compete on radio and television for more and more ads, for purchasing teams where they could monopolize who would drink beer inside of their stadiums. After a while, Falstaff fell on hard times because they couldn't pay their advertising budget, and eventually they almost went into receivership. A Zionist individual in California purchased the Falstaff Brewing Company. What happened can only be called atrocious when this company was purchased. The person who did it, I believe his name was Paul Kalmanovitz. Let me read you what someone said here about it, which is on the internet at falstaffbrewing.com, which some of the older employees put together after the disaster. He was talking about his father. He says, he was such a loyal employee that he had both my sister and I bow my heads whenever we passed the old Falstaff headquarters at 5050 Oakland in St. Louis, Missouri. I had my first sip of beer when I was but a toddler, and by age 6, I knew the proper way to pour a beer and serve it to a guest. Daddy has been dead for, 7 years. He gave his life to a corporation, and the corporation pretty much dumped on him and all the other people who had worked for many, many years at Falstaff. My dad lost his livelihood, his pride, his home, his honor, when the brewery was bought by a very petty, evil man way back in 1975 when I was a senior in college. I remember it well because Daddy was in the hospital with a gangrenous appendix, and right after surgery, the man who bought the company, Paul Kalmanovitz, called him in his hospital room and fired him. Yes, after 42 years of service, he fired my dad. What made it worse was that Daddy, age 62, not eligible at that time for Social Security, had to go look for a job and accept unemployment benefits. My mom and dad had to sell the house we grew up in and move into an apartment. The company refused to give him his pension, which he had paid into for all those years. Daddy, along with other executives at Falstaff, had to fight for his pension in court. He went all the way to the Supreme Court, and finally 5 years later, after losing everything, Daddy won. Now, this was back in the days when a Fortune 500 executive made way under $100,000 a year. My dad made $42,000 a year when he was fired back in 1975. So you can imagine the tragedy of what happened, not only to this boy's father, who lost his house while this young man was going to college, but to all of the other 30,000 to 60,000 employees who were suddenly tossed out on the streets because a Zionist by the name of Paul Kalmanovitz in California bought this company simply for the pleasure of selling it off piece by piece and making far more money from the stock in the company that he had paid for than the company was worth by itself. This was something that the Jewish people who ran industry had been doing for decades in America. We had a series of industries here that was unlike anything else in the world. We had individuals that ran factories and passed them on to their children. And Jews like Paul Kalmanovitz, who had access to Jewish banking money from the Rothschild banks that get their money through the Federal Reserve System, which is owned and operated by banks mostly in Europe that are called the Rothschild banks. These Jews who have been able to secure money rather reasonably in terms of interest versus what other people can get it for, because basically when you get money from a bank, you go in and you negotiate. Guess what? If you're a Jew, you get a lot better rate. If you're a Gentile, you might pay double. You might pay triple. But you'll at least pay at least 1 or 2 or 3 percentage points more than the Jewish brother will pay. Because after all, the Jewish brother is family. And even if he's only a cousin or a nephew or a distant cousin, maybe he comes from a different country, but you see him at the synagogue with a skull cap on, well, he's a part of the family, and so you want to do something for him. So these Jews began to buy up industries like the huge Falstaff Brewing Company, tear them apart, sell them factory by factory, piece by piece, destroying 50 years of highly trained, highly educated people who worked in that company. They were tossed out on the street, but Paul Kalmanovitz got his money, didn't he? The unfortunate truth is that to a Jew, it doesn't matter if thousands and thousands of Gentiles are thrown out on the street and their lives are ruined. As long as the Jew makes money off the deal, that's all that counts. And we saw this over and over again from the 1960s to the present day. We used to have a huge glass industry of glass bottles here in America, and it was all sold piecemeal, and then all of a sudden a lot of it was sold to people who were headquartered in Mexico. These factories closed down, and Mexicans began making the bottles, and eventually the glass bottle business began to dissipate because of plastics. But there were entire towns all over the Midwest, the South, the North, New England, out on the West Coast, who lost thousands and thousands of jobs because the only job in the town was making bottles, and that was the end of that. In the Jewish Talmud, you find that dealings between Jews should be done in a humane way, but dealings with the Gentiles, who are called cattle or goyim, can be done in a very cruel way. In fact, the Gentile, if necessary, can be killed, which I believe we saw happen with the Jack Abramoff story in his purchase of this cruise line down in Florida, the gambling cruise line. Suddenly, the original owner of it ended up dead, and he was killed by two employees of Jack Abramoff's partner. It's a very despicable thing, and I've often thought that we should hold the Jews responsible for their cruelty to Gentiles. I think that we have to decide that it's time to eventually stop being a colony for Jewish people here in our own country. We're the majority, we're 98% of the people, and to allow people to take over our industries, to toss us out into the street because they have the money to do so, is wrong. Now, in America, there's always been this idea that Well, if you're a Rockefeller or if you're a Guggenheim or if you're somebody that has a lot of money, you can throw it around and you can destroy people's lives. But I think that needs to come to an end. We've had enough lives destroyed by Jewish people, and they seem to be more brutal than the Gentiles, and we just need to put a stop to it. And besides, we can see, since they dominate the banking industry, that they're going to own everything anyway, and that means they're going to be a kind of royalty. And we live in a democracy, which is supposed to be a republic, but we certainly outlawed royalty. And so to have a line of people who constantly, because of their small number, are able to cooperate with each other and to make sure that the larger number are kept away so that the smaller number benefits by riding atop the back of the majority, the vast majority. Well, there's just something despicable and wrong about that, which has to end. And I'm throwing down the gauntlet here at Jew Watch and saying, look at the materials. Look at all of the things the Jews have done in banking and stock manipulations. It's all up here on Jew Watch. Document after document after document. Very, very historical. It's time that we throw down the gauntlet and say, enough's enough. It's time for this to end. It would be nice if it would end in a very peaceful way, but I have my doubts that it will. But things can end peacefully, like the Soviet Union, which was run by the Jewish people, fell with a whimper. No one did a thing. It just sort of fell in a week, and then it was over. This is the way these things play out. You don't have to have a war. You don't have to have a revolution. If you wait long enough, eventually the disease will die of its own infection. I would like to give my heartfelt sympathies to some Jewish people who were hurt in Moscow today. A very, very shameful thing occurred that occurs now and then, which I find very, very despicable. A young man knifed worshippers at a Moscow synagogue, and 8 people were stabbed. This is terrible. This should never happen. This should never happen in a white society, in a Christian society, but some demented young man who is described as a skinhead and as a right-winger stabbed these Jewish people in a place of worship. And I'm sure that most of the people listening to my voice, despite the fact that my website is called Anti-Semitic, agree with me that this is something that should never, ever happen. There's such a thing as humanity. There's such a thing as individual people who have nothing to do with the large Jewish cabal that's going on. And some people take this a little too far, and this is way, way too far. The young man, according to the story, wielded a knife and shouted, Heil Hitler. Now, that may be true, and it may not be true. I'm not sure. There's been so much disinformation in the news about people doing things and yelling Heil Hitler and calling somebody a kike or something when they stab them. I suppose it could go along with the turf. If a person was going to stab Jewish people just simply because they're Jewish, well, they might say something like that while they're doing it. But I'm going to personally take no responsibility as a Christian for what happened here, despite the fact that in this news article that I'm looking at right now on the computer from Reuters, the Jews, the rabbis in the area are spinning this story so that you and I are supposed to be responsible for what somebody did, whom we know nothing about, thousands and thousands of miles away on the other side of the world, and when it was light there, it was dark here, and we were asleep, so we have nothing to do with this. But what happens here is that people will always try to use this against certain groups and say, well, because this one mentally ill person did this, therefore the rest of the group is tainted with it. So if this man is in a group of skinheads, oh, well, then all the skinheads are responsible, even though the other skinheads didn't do anything. And that's wrong, and that's evil. The Russian chief rabbi, Beryl Lazar, blamed a fascist plague for the attack. Well, see, I don't believe that. I don't think there's a fascist plague going on in the Soviet Union. I think this is a figment of this rabbi's imagination. And I think he's exploiting this one isolated incident in order to push an agenda that is not necessarily true. He told the news agency Interfax, I'm talking about Russian chief rabbi Beryl Lazar, that, quote, in places where the ideas of fascism are propagandized, in the end without fail, they will turn into reality as happened today in Moscow, unquote. Well, the rabbi knows nothing about this. He was in Jerusalem on the phone talking to Interfax when he said that. He wasn't even there. He didn't see it. You see, he's putting a spin on it. White people are bad. Fascism is bad. Well, fascism is so bad, Rabbi Beryl Lazar. Why in the world did you go to Israel, which is the most fascist state in the world? There's no other state on this planet that is more Nazi-like and fascist and right-wing than Israel. Here you have a bunch of people who are Europeans who come into an Arab area. You sit down there, you destroy the homes and villages of Palestinians, and you take them for yourself. So let me use your words here. What did you say there? You said, in places where the ideas of fascism are propagandized, in the end without fail they will turn into reality as happened today in Moscow. No, sir. As happened 50 years ago and every day since then, since 1947, in Israel. Yes. Fascism. What they propagandize in the end will turn into reality. Look at the Palestinians. Would you like to be treated like a Palestinian? We have 8 stabbed Jewish people in Moscow. And I feel sorry for these people, and I think it's terrible. And if I were to talk to you, Rabbi Lazar, I would, you know, tell you I'm very sorry about what happened. I have nothing to do with it. But I'm very sorry that it happened. And I'd like to see you say the same thing to the Palestinians. That you didn't have anything to do with Israel, but you're very sorry that Israel happened and that the Palestinians suffered. Well, it says here that last year a Nationalist Party was barred from Moscow city elections after a campaign clip urged people to clean the city of rubbish after showing a group of darker-skinned men from the Russian Caucasus. It also says that dozens of African and Asian nationals have also been targeted by, quote, neo-Nazi groups, unquote. I suppose that's true. I guess in every country you're going to have certain groups of people who are going to target dark-skinned folks. But I don't think this has to do with being a neo-Nazi or a skinhead. And I don't think that these groups are necessarily neo-Nazi. They may be nationalist. They might be nationalist enough to want the Jews to leave Russia. And why in the world would they want the Jews to stay in Russia? The Jews were responsible for the Soviet Union, in which 65 million of their relatives were killed under the leadership of Lenin, Stalin, under Leon Trotsky, whose real name was David Bronstein, and all three of these people were Jews and married to Jews, and they were very vicious, and they ruled by the Talmud. And they believed that Gentiles were lesser than Jewish people. That Jewish people, for some reason, were far, far better. And so they had their way with them. So I don't think it's necessarily fascism, although the Jewish rule of Russia was, I suppose, quite fascist. But I remember the Reginald Denny case. I don't think there was any fascism there. You had Reginald Denny, a white person driving through an area in Los Angeles during a riot, and he was pulled out of his car or his truck, and we all watched it live. We were in the helicopter in that TV camera that was looking down as Reginald Denny had his head busted open by a savage black person who was stomping his head into the ground. Now, I can assure you that the black person that did that was not a skinhead. He was not a fascist. He was not a member of a right-wing fascist party. But what he did was extremely brutal. Now, I'll tell you who was a fascist, was Menachem Begin. Menachem Begin was a fascist. He was in Shin Bet. He would kill anybody and torture anybody to make sure that the nation of Israel came about. And he did. Oh, yeah. We've discussed it many, many times. He blew up the King David Hotel because he knew that it had civilians in it, including children and women, mostly children and women. He blew it up. Then he went to Deir Yassin, which was a village that had 500 people in it, and he proceeded to kill approximately 100 people. But he didn't just kill them. He tore open their guts, and he took pregnant women and tore open their wombs and held the dying fetus in the air for the Arabs to see. And then he let the Arabs escape, hundreds of them. They went all over Palestine saying, these Jews are crazy. This is what they did at the Deir Yassin. And then a few days or weeks later, here comes the UN is leaving and here comes the war. And the Arabs told their people, I know you're frightened. The Jews are coming, so leave. Leave your homes, get out of there so you don't get your guts ripped out. So they left and they couldn't come back. And the Israelis put troops all around and said, you can't come back in here. You're no longer welcome in your own home. We're going to steal your home. We're going to steal your graveyards. We're going to take everything that you have. We're going to commit genocide against you. So, Rabbi Lazar, yes, yes, in a way you're right. Fascism can cause terrible things to happen. But you, sir, are a part of the fascism yourself. You go to Israel, and you wine and dine with the fascists who are killing people right now and bulldozing their houses, and you're probably mourning the fact that Ariel Sharon is about on his deathbed. And there's a man who killed hundreds and hundreds of people in Lebanon who were in his care, allowed the phalangists to kill him, and who went into Gaza bulldozing one town down after the other. So I feel sorry for the 8 Jews who were knifed in Moscow. But I don't take any responsibility, and none of my race should take any responsibility for some idiot hothead going in there and doing that, and I hope the person is prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, and I would personally put him to death if I were the judge, if that is possible. Because I don't think people should do that. And I think if you're willing to do that, if you're that crazy, you ought to probably be put to death anyway. Although putting him to death might make him a martyr, so, you know, maybe they could just put him in jail for the rest of his life. He's a very, very sorry person for having done that, and I think it's absolutely despicable. There was a positive sign for Israeli fascism today, because it seems that Hamas, which has always called for the destruction of Israel, has blinked. And Hamas has dropped its call for the destruction of Israel from its manifesto for the Palestinian parliamentary election, which comes in a fortnight in occupied Palestine. And this is a move that brings the group closer to the mainstream Palestinian position of building a state within the boundaries of the occupied territories. The Islamist faction, responsible for a long campaign of suicide bombings and other attacks on Israelis, still calls for the maintenance of the armed struggle against occupation, but it steps back from Hamas's 1988 charter demanding Israel's eradication and the establishment of a Palestinian state in its place. Pardon me if I'm not really impressed by the spin that was put on this in the press, because I just don't think that people really are going to get along with those who have invaded their country and taken away everything that they owned. I don't think that's the way that it works. In fact, I know it doesn't work that way. The Indians here in America fought like bandits when the Europeans came here. And even when they knew they were going to lose, they continued to fight and to fight and to fight. That's what people do. They never give up. We finally had to practically exterminate the Indians in order to get them to stop. And that's the way these wars go. Evidently, the Hamas is going to emerge as the second largest party after Abbas's Fatah party in the next Palestinian parliament. That'll be interesting because Hamas probably, once it gets into parliament, will again say that it wants to destroy Israel because these things don't go away. Now, they might become political and not do it, but I would imagine that eventually they will call for the destruction of Israel, because if they don't, another party will emerge that will call for it, and that party will receive the votes that Hamas will lose by not doing so anymore. And that's just the way of politics. It reminds me of the phrase that no good turn goes unpunished. And if I were a Palestinian, and I had this colonialist European state that had killed my mother and father and stolen their homes, I would make sure that my children would strap a bomb on and go in and destroy every Israeli they could take with them. This is not going to go away. You can't do this and get by with it. It's just not the way of the world. Did you notice on Jew Watch today that Israel has banned any tourist contact with the U.S. evangelist who loves Jews and kisses up under them constantly? And I'm talking about none other than Pat Robertson. Well, we've heard plenty from Pat over the years. He ran for president. He's very pro-Zionist. He loves Jews. I think he loves Jews more than he loves Christians. I believe he worships Jesus Christ, not because Jesus Christ was the Lord and Savior, but because he thinks Jesus Christ was Jewish. That's why I think he worships him. I think that Pat Robertson doesn't have any good in his heart toward the European people of this world. He considers us to be somehow inferior to God's chosen people. Well, there are people in this country and in this world who believe that white people are the chosen people, Mr. Robertson. Yes, that's true. There are many people who believe that God's chosen people are the white people. There are many reasons for this. You can look at the inventions of white people like electricity, radio, television. You can look at medicine, the invention of the discovery of penicillin, the discovery of vaccines. And they weren't first discovered by Jonas Salk. Jonas Salk had a lot of Gentiles working for him. And there were other people on the trail. It was a Gentile who discovered the smallpox vaccine, which was found in the sores on cows, cowpox, and it was known that milkmaids did not get smallpox. And so a Gentile physician began to experiment, and he discovered just the right amount of cowpox that needed to be administered to make sure that a person would be immune from smallpox. That man's name was not Salk. It was not Rosenberg. It was not Greenstein. No. It was a Gentile name. It was Dr. Edward Jenner. It is possible, my Jewish friends, for the Gentiles to run the world, to run their lives, and not have you do it for them. Do you realize that? I don't know if you do realize that, but it is true. We do not need you. You are simply something that's out there that is sucking on our energy, that is taking interest from us when we buy a house, using the taxes to our governments to fund wars for Israel. We do not need you. The world can live without Israel. The world can live without the Rothschild banks. In fact, it can do very, very nicely without them. And we did very nicely before the first Jew ever came to Europe. We have a long and proud history of living without Jewish people and without Zionism and without communism and with all these other inventions of yours, like psychiatry, which is a crazy science, one that is populated mostly by Jewish people for some reason. They just love it. I suppose it's the money, where you put somebody down onto a couch and you charge them $95 every half hour. It's probably every 15 minutes now. It was later proven to be a total fraud and totally useless in helping anybody that had schizophrenia or any other of these diseases, because it was discovered that schizophrenia was a chemical disorder, and if you gave the person the missing chemical, guess what? His brain returned to some sort of normality as long as he continued taking his medicine. So no amount of lying on a couch and talking to a shrink would ever help somebody with a true mental illness, which is what Freud said. And Freud was someone who should know better, because Freud was a crackhead. He smoked coke every day of his life, as did all of his buddies. Of course, lots of people did back then. And he knew that his own unhappiness was helped by taking cocaine. And a lot of people in the United States evidently knew that too, because they were drinking Coca-Cola that was just drenched with cocaine. And today people are still drinking coffee, which has caffeine in it, which is the major element that cocaine has, which is kind of a chemical that provides a rush to people. Makes them wake up. It makes them think a little more brilliantly. Something that I probably need to do on these radio shows. But it is something that Freud didn't remember when he wrote about all of these psychiatric things. He thought that people had Oedipus complexes, that there was this thing where Oedipus married his mother in ancient history in a story, so therefore everybody wanted to marry their mother. And there's a little element of truth in that. But just because you want to marry your mother doesn't mean that you will marry your mother. You might think that you're going to fly, but it doesn't mean you're going to jump off of a cliff. And it doesn't mean you're going to pine away and become a schizophrenic, and Freud took this just a little bit too far. And the reason that I mention all of this is the lies that have been espoused by Reverend Pat Robertson all of his life, that you have to understand that Jesus is only coming back to Jerusalem because the Zionists are there. That God loves these people. Despite the fact that these are not the people that used to live in Israel back in 500 BC and even further back around 2000, 2500 BC, when Abraham and the rest of them were walking around getting these promises and Noah was on the ocean in a ship, which no one believes anymore, although there are some people that believe it. And I'm not going to say that whether you believe it or not makes any difference. But it does seem strange to me that when all these people were killed so that the bad people would be wiped out, that somehow we still have bad people in this world. In fact, his sons were bad, and according to Christian mythology, they were turned into black people and sentenced to live in Omri, south of Egypt, which is where the Nubians lived, who were black. The Bible, I have found, is a very, very racist book. Every page of the Bible is about race. And those of you listening to my voice, you probably never heard that, but if you look at the book of Matthew, and if you check around the library, you'll find a book eventually that will translate it properly. And it says, Matthew, the book of the race of Jesus Christ. And it immediately, in the first chapter, gives the entire genealogy of Jesus Christ from Adam all the way to Jesus Christ. Mother and father, mother and father, mother and father beget this child and this child and this child, who they married, etc., to prove that he was of the holy race of God. Of course, he couldn't be totally of the holy race of God except by being born of a virgin, because the holy race of God had been pretty much bred out of the Hebrews by then, who lived in the area, because they had lived in Egypt, they had lived in Babylon, they lived in Medo-Persia, and they intermarried with these people. In fact, when they came back to Israel, they married the Edomites and Ezra and Nehemiah. You ought to read those books if you're interested. Very short books, in which Ezra and Nehemiah, who are prophets, told the Hebrews, you've done something very evil. You've married foreign, strange, they call them sort of strange wives. Foreigners, non-white people. So send them away along with your children, divorce them, and marry your own kind. The Bible is racist on every single page. The Egyptians were killed But the firstborn of the Israelis, or the Hebrews, they weren't Israelis at all, they'd never been to Israel, of the Hebrews were saved. That's racism. God, ladies and gentlemen, was a racist. And the entire Bible, you probably didn't realize it, has been a racist Bible from the beginning. In fact, you have these two commandments. One of them is not to have sex with your neighbor's wife. And another one, that you're not supposed to commit adultery. Well, you see, that's two different things. Adultery means that you adulterate the final product of your offspring, meaning that you marry a black person, or you marry a Chinese person, but you marry outside of your race, and you disrespect your father and your mother by doing that. Don't you think that these Hebrews that were walking around in the desert, there were all these other tribes around, were tempted to marry a foreign wife and fall away from the tribe? They didn't want that to happen. And their God told them not to do that. But these same so-called Hebrews are back there in Israel right now. And they're as racist as they can be. They have these apartheid walls being built. And Pat Robertson thinks they're great. And he prays for them while he's standing with this black minister who he has on his show. And I don't know the man's name. I used to know it. I don't watch the show. But he's on there all the time, and there are all of these other races on there, because Pat's on the take with every race that he can get a penny from. He's got his little rusty tin cup out there, sucking money away from people and having old ladies sign away their homes to him, go out living on the streets. And other people, when they pass away, instead of giving their home to their kids, they give it to Pat Robertson so he can stay on the TV, on the Jewish cable network, and on the Jewish-owned CBS, which is owned by Murray Rothstein, alias Sumner Redstone. And it's no secret that the reason that these ministers are Zionist Christians, and they call themselves Judeo-Christians, is that they have to do that to get the Jews that own the cable networks and the other networks to let them on the darned air. They can't get on the air unless they pander to the Jews, twist Christianity around, and lie to their people and tell them, look, this is a Jewish religion. Despite the fact that Jesus was an anti-Semite, who in John told the Pharisees, John 8:44, that you are of your father the devil, who was a liar and was always a liar and shall always be a liar. You say you're from Abraham? No. Your father is Satan. And of course, the great priests of the Hebrews were called Kohens. We spell it C-O-H-E-N. But they didn't really have any vowels then. It was more of a K-N sound, Kohen. And we have that name all over the world. Like out in Mongolia, you had the Khans, the Kublai Khans, you know, and all of this. And the Khans, the Kohens, migrated to Russia, slaughtering everybody in their path. And then they married their wives, who were now without a husband since they killed their husbands. They enslaved their children and made a kind of quasi-Mongol state around 600 AD, south of Kiev, north of Turkey. And they were asked, do you want to be Christian, Jewish, or Muslim? Well, you could drink if you were Jewish, and you could drink if you were Christian, but you couldn't drink if you were a Muslim, so they decided they would become either Christian or Jewish. If they became Christian, they'd have to fight the Turks, who were Muslim. If they became a Muslim, they'd have to fight the Russians, who were Christian. But if they were Jewish, no one would be at war with them, so they converted to Judaism. And as a story, that was in 740 A.D., their king's name was, believe it or not, King John. That was his name. And they brought Jewish scribes in and teachers to teach these Mongols from Mongolia, how to be Jews. And 95% of the Jews today come from the nation of Khazaria. You know, like the word Kazam comes from Khazaria. These were a strange, mythical people. Well, they were real people. And they became the Jews who overtook Europe, and only about 5% of the Jews are related at all to the Hebrews of Israel. There was a huge wipeout of most of the Hebrew people along the empire when the Mongols came through and they went all the way to Morocco. They could have taken all of Europe. Catholic Church thought they were going to, but I believe it was Kublai Khan died. It was Kublai Khan? Who was it? I know, it was Genghis Khan died while they were just about ready to fight their way through Poland and Germany, take the whole thing. And they all got up and left and went back with his body and buried him in a secret place. All the people who buried him were evidently killed. And then when those who killed him came back, they killed them so that no one would know. I wouldn't have wanted to be a grave digger back then. But I kind of feel like one of those grave diggers when I live in America. And when I buy a house, I'm not buying a house, I'm really buying the loan from a Jewish banker. I might be looking at a Gentile when I go to the bank, but the money flow is, the faucet for the money is controlled by the Rothschild Empire, the New World Order. And the Jews would say to me, well, that's kind of anti-Semitic for you to say that. No, it's the truth. It's the way that it is. But at any rate, this Jew lover, Pat Robertson, now cannot work with Israelis for his lucrative tours. The Israeli tourism minister has said that he has given instructions to stop all contact with groups associated with Robertson. They don't like what he said. He said that Ariel Sharon was punished by God for giving away part of the Holy Land for the holy people. The prime minister said that the order did not apply to all of the evangelical community. Then he said, God forbid. He's probably an atheist, like most of the Israelis. Robertson is leading a group of evangelicals who've pledged to raise $50 million to build a Christian Heritage Center in Israel's northern Galilee region where tradition says Jesus lived and taught. And under a tentative agreement, Robertson's group was to put up the funding while Israel would provide land and infrastructure. But it looks like that's all being called off now. Hirschman had predicted it would drop to 1 million pilgrims a year, generate $1.5 billion in spending, and support about 40,000 jobs. But the fate of the project is now in question, said Edu Hartov. Well, I can assure you, if Israel's going to make $1.5 billion, or Mr. Robertson will have what he wants. That's a given. So guess what happened in England? Good old Merry England today. Seems that a cleric there who has been closely watched, and now his trial's being watched. A prominent cleric, who's a Muslim, was accused of inciting hatred against Jews and seeking the installation of an Islamic caliphate in the White House. Yes, he wants an Islamic caliphate in the White House. He is said to have praised Hitler and to have voiced support for suicide bombings. Yeah, baby. The alleged offenses against various British laws were said to have taken place in a series of lectures and sermons recorded on videotape and audio cassettes. The cleric has denied all 15 charges against him, which include inciting racial hatred, of possessing a 10-volume encyclopedia on the Afghani jihad, which is described as a manual for terrorism by prosecutors. And there are several other inquiries about him. The prosecutor said that Masri, which is the man's name, encouraged his listeners, whether they were in an audience or at a private meeting or a congregation at the mosque, to believe it was a part of a religious duty to fight in the cause of Allah, God. And as part of the religious duty to fight in the cause of Allah, it was part of the religious duty to kill. Well, duh, isn't that the Muslim religion? The people they were being encouraged to kill, put shortly, were non-believers, those who did not believe in or who were not a follower, or even a true follower of Islam. The accusations that Perry depicted, he's the prosecutor, included intolerance, bigotry, and hatred. And he says that Masri allegedly sought to instill these things among some British Muslims. He's the best known British Islamic leader to come to trial since the September 11th attacks. Well, that's probably going to be very, very interesting, don't you imagine? Very, very interesting. I don't know if this is the Muslim that is blind that you keep seeing on the Jewish news. But the Jews have kind of tried to take this story over as usual. They say that he's also known as Mustafa Kamil Mustafa, and I think that is that person that you see in the news all the time. That he basically... He doesn't like Jewish folks. Says in the course of one lecture, he accused the Jews of being blasphemous traitors and dirty. This because of the treachery, because of their blasphemy and filth, was why Hitler was sent into the world. Oh, yeah, baby. That'll go over really big in England. Well, the Zionists really are not turkeys, but they're keeping an eye on the Turkish bird flu. The health and agriculture ministers of Israel are monitoring the avian flu situation in that country and have advised the public to avoid poultry and birds if they visit Turkey. There's little likelihood that an infected bird will arrive in Israel because the bird migration season is over. But you never know. In any case, they are concerned enough to be watching very, very closely. It would be possible if the bird flu came to Israel and was transmitted from person to person, which they think is going to happen. It's called the H5N1 flu strain, by the way. And 15 people in Turkey are infected if it begins to pass from human to human. It looks like it may be doing that in Turkey. This could destroy Israel. It could destroy all of Palestine. It could destroy Egypt. It could destroy the United States. It would not be pleasant because it kills, this disease, so far kills approximately 40 to 90% of the people who get it. And worldwide, they are very concerned. This particular strain of flu turns out to be the same strain of flu known as the swine flu. It's very similar. And I think it's very interesting that the United States dug up some Eskimo bodies a few years ago to find out what kind of flu they had. And guess what? It was the avian flu, this flu. And now all of a sudden, it starts up in China, and it's going all over the world. How could that be? We didn't have any of this swine flu after the huge epidemic killed 30 to 100 million people at the close of World War I. And now once they dig up a few bodies and very carefully examine it, suddenly it appears again. Find that very suspicious. And I can see why the Israelis are worried, because they don't have that many people anyway. Maybe they have 4 million Jewish people living there, what they call Jewish people. They're really Mongolian people. Living there in Israel, where the Hebrews used to live, and these people living there now have nothing to do with that. But they think they do, and perception is, in many cases, all the reality that a person needs. Well, I know you come here for the Jewish news story, so I'm going to give you another one now. And this is a story about Hillary. Hillary is the shiksa in New York that became senator. She's not Jewish, she's a shiksa. And at Yeshiva University, she was presented with an honorary degree commemorating Yeshiva's 81st annual Hanukkah convocation. And the 700 Jews in the crowd assembled on December 11th in a gilded ballroom to meet Hillary. She was in a sea of caps and gowns. I'm sure she was quite stunning for a shiksa. At any rate, all of her Jewish friends were there to see her, and she's become quite popular. It's amazing, when she first started out, less than half of the Jews in New York wanted her. Not certain, but she may have been running against a Jewish person. There were some Jewish persons that wanted the job, and I think they were running in the primaries. And the shiksa beat them out. And but they've learned to love Hillary. Because Jews of all stripes in New York kind of like her now. And percentage-wise, it looks like they're going to give her a pretty good vote. When she first ran, she only got 52% of Jews having a favorable view of her. But now, 72% of the state's Jews have given her high marks. Well, there you go. There you go, Hillary. I think that's just absolutely wonderful. And you can be the Shiksa of New York for another term. Very, very good. The Zionists are in a bit of a quandary. They host 10,000 young Jews from 29 countries every winter in Israel. And they're free to go throughout any places that they want to in occupied Palestine, including Palestinian territory. And they like the program because it's very good. It's propaganda. These people come back as rabid Zionists to their homes all over the world. And they have one little problem now, though, that there are those who are funding the trips who say that the opportunity to experience Israel is the birthright of every Jew, but to their chagrin, there is a small handful of young activists who have used the trips recently to volunteer for pro-Palestine organizations in the West Bank. And some of those organizations directly oppose the Israeli government and Zionist ideology. Well, as you can imagine, this doesn't go over too well in the mind of a Zionist. The small movement has some in the Jewish community wondering whether the Taglit Birthright Israel program is being hijacked, which is what they call the program for bringing these young Jews there to propagandize them. But as the Holocaust shifts from memory to history, it also points to the efforts of young diasporal Jews to define their own ideologies. And they've been in the forefront of social change. They say, well, these young people have the right to explore, but only to explore certain values. So there you go. And this one activist, young Jewish girl, she says, for me, being a Jewish person means supporting social justice. For me, being Jewish doesn't mean supporting Israel. Her name's Jessica. She traveled to Israel with Sharashim, a birthright travel organizer, in 2004. And she started protesting the Israeli occupation of Palestine. She thought it was unfair and that the Israelis should go back to Europe. Yeah, I don't think that's exactly what they were looking for. I want to thank you for listening to The World Today, and I want to remind you that my name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch.com, which is the most visited website on Jewish history in the world. We have over 1.3 million people now coming to the website every year, and we think that by the end of this year that we'll probably have over 2 million coming this year. To learn about the Jews that ran the Soviet Union, sadistically killing 65 million Gentiles, almost all of them Christians. These are hidden parts of history that the Zionists, the Jews, the Communists, the New Yorkers, where most of the Communists and Jews that we know came from, They don't want you to know their true history. They don't want you to know what their relatives did in the past. And they don't want you to know what they're doing now. Which is why they own the news, why they own the banks, why they own the government, and why they're having their way with us. Oh yes, they'll say that I'm an anti-Semite for mentioning it, but let me tell you something. When you've decided to play big party politics, when you've decided to take over both the Republican and the Democratic Party, as the Judeo-con or neocon movement has done, then you're going to have to realize that people are going to inspect what you're doing. It's like anyone that goes up to the White House as president, like Clinton. Kerry tried to get in. Suddenly everything that you do is subject to intense inspection. And that's my function. I'm giving you an intense inspection. I am inspecting everything that you have ever done, because you are trying to run my country, which is a country of 300 million people. And since you're trying to do that, I and my fellow citizens have a right to inspect the goods that you are offering us, including yourselves, and what you've done in the past and what you're doing now. We have a right to pull the Jack Abramoffs out from under the rocks where they hide in the darkness and hope to remain forever unseen by everyone, and pull them up out from under the rocks and the darkness into the bright sunlight so that all of us can inspect you. We can look at your dirty linen as well as your clean linen and find out what it is that you're all about. I know that you don't like us talking about what you did in the Soviet Union, but I'm a reporter and I'm a librarian, and let me tell you something. If you hadn't done it, I wouldn't be reporting it. So the answer is, just don't do it. I know it's too late for you not to do what you did in the Soviet Union, but you did it, and we have a right to look at it and study it, because if you don't look at history, then you're doomed to have it repeated. And a lot of white people, a lot of Christians died in Russia at your hands. I hear you got Charles Schumer up there trying to decide who's going to be the Supreme Court nominee that who is approved. Jumping all over this Christian Alito. That's a pretty anti-Christian thing to do. The man's wife was in tears. She had to leave the room because of what was being done to her husband by these Jews in the Judiciary Committee. Well, you Jewish people don't have any qualms about driving a man's wife to tears. And I think you're probably men enough and women enough to be able to take my introspection. And like I say again, if you didn't want us to talk about what you did in Russia, well, but you know, by killing the 65 million people and killing the innocent daughters and son of Tsar Nicholas, well, you didn't have to do that, but you did it anyway, which was very sadistic and very, very, it's an awful thing to do for a people who are a minority in a country to kill the majority's king and queen and the little princes and princesses, and then hide their bodies, you know, like it's a dead dog in the woods, where they stayed for 50 years, more than that, almost 80 years, without a funeral. You know, you Jews did that, and it's okay for us to look at it, because you are the Big Apple now. You have 10 senators, you have more than that in the House, you are way past your numbers in the Judiciary Committee, because you know that the way to control a country is to put all sorts of Jewish judges in. And you've made sure that you've done that because you control these judiciary appointment facilities in the Senate and House. And as a matter of fact, you've got two Jews in the Supreme Court, and there shouldn't be one because the Supreme Court has 9 people. And in order for the Jews to have their rightful place, there would have to be 98 Gentile justices and only 2 Jewish ones for you to have your true number. But you have 2 there, and there are only 7 others for the Gentiles. And you think that's fair? Yes, I know you do think it's fair, but see, that's what's wrong with you. You think it's fair if you run everything and if the majority gets stepped on so that you can have all the top positions. Oh, I know you don't have them all. We have 7 of them. But it's still not right for you to have 2. You shouldn't have any. You're a minority, and you need to act like a minority, and you need to stop trying to run this country. A democracy is not up for grabs by money grubbers who are able to get money from people through hook and crook, like that Falstaff Brewing Company deal, where the Jew bought the company, sold it off piecemeal, and destroyed the lives of 60,000 people in the St. Louis, Missouri area. You've done some pretty bad things, and I'm going to talk about them, and you're going to listen. This has been another broadcast of The World Today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian of Jew Watch. JewWatch.com, the largest and most visited archive of Jewish history in the world. Thank you for coming, and we will see you again tomorrow. Have a very nice day.